Good morning. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. This morning, I'll be reading the preface from Scott Wiedenthal's book, Living on the Wind, Across the Hemisphere with Migratory Birds. Wiedenthal's writing is a favorite among birders, and the preface is almost like a secret handshake. Living on the Wind was published 23 years ago, and since then he has written many other books, most recently World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds, published in 2021 by W.W. Norton. His name is spelled Wiedensaul. At whatever moment you read these words, day or night, there are birds aloft in the skies of the Western Hemisphere, migrating. If it is spring or fall, the great pivot points of the year, then the continents are swarming with billions of traveling birds, a flood so great that even the most ignorant and unobservant notice, if nothing else, the skeins of geese and the flocks of robins. But the migration's breadth goes far beyond those obvious watersheds, shifting endlessly across distance and season. In the middle of July, Hudsonian godwits lift off from the iceberg-choked shores of the Beaufort Sea, heading southeast along the northern rim of Canada to Labrador, then vaulting south in a non-stop flight to Venezuela. In the snow squalls of December, goshawks and golden eagles fly south along the ridges of the Appalachians, over oak trees that rattle their last stiff, dead leaves at the wind. Even within the tropics, a land where migration would seem unnecessary, birds move with the seasonal rains and droughts across hundreds of miles, following the blossoming of flowers and the ripening of fruit. They don't all follow the expected course, nor do they always travel by wing. With the first winter snows, blue grouse leave the more temperate foothills of the western mountains and migrate, on foot no less, into the bitter, wind-drifted high country, searching for conifer needles to eat. A very few travel even beyond the bounds of the hemisphere. Tiny songbirds from Alaska leap west across the Bering Sea to the Philippines, and others from eastern Canada cross the North Atlantic to Europe and Central Africa. Short-tailed albatrosses from Japan glide down the coast of Washington in summer on wings as fragile as a whisper. In those same waters, the albatrosses pass shearwaters from New Zealand and storm petrels from Antarctica and the Galapagos. Even the darkness moves with the passage of birds. On soft spring midnights, the air is alive with the flight notes of unseen warblers and vireos, thrushes and orioles, sparrows and tanagers, filtering down through the moonlight like voices of stars. Bird migration is the only one true unifying natural phenomenon in the world, stitching the continents together in a way that even the great weather systems, which roar out of the poles but fizzle at the equator, fail to do. It's an enormously complex subject, perhaps the most compelling drama in all of natural history. That such delicate creatures undertake these epic journeys defies belief. Only recently have scientists discovered that some shorebirds apparently fly nonstop from the southern tip of South America to the coast of New Jersey, a journey of 10 days, 240 hours of uninterrupted flight. Even more remarkable are the 4-ounce Arctic terns that leave the northern fringe of the continent each autumn, flying east across the Atlantic to Europe. They push south along the bulge of Africa, recross the Atlantic to the edge of South America, and spend the winter months moving east off of Antarctica. In spring, they reverse course, moving up southern Africa and lancing back to Canada, a figure eight inscribed on half the globe, a track that returns them, often as not, to precisely the same sheltered nook where they nested the summer before. Even scientists have little grasp of the numbers of birds involved in this seasonal ebb and flow. In spring, hordes of warblers, tanagers, vireos, and other tropical migrants cross the Gulf of Mexico each night, arriving on the U.S. coast at a rate that may exceed 100,000 songbirds per mile of shoreline, with tens of millions making landfall each day. on a single autumn night several years ago on radar on Cape Cod indicated that 12 million songbirds passed overhead. And on the narrow coastal plain of Veracruz, Mexico, biologists discovered only recently one of the greatest raptor migrations in the world, where nearly a million hawks have been counted in a single day. In all, scientists guess, more than 5 billion birds annually weave this incredible tapestry across the hemisphere. Because they travel such extraordinary distances, often with differing requirements for food and shelter along the way, migratory birds pose one of the stickiest conservation challenges in the world. In the past, preservation programs focused on saving breeding areas, but experts now realize they must also save wintering grounds and migratory stopovers if this global web isn't to unravel. There are serious signs of fraying. Birders have warned for years that songbird numbers were dropping, and now scientists have hard evidence that some beloved species, like wood thrushes and cerulean warblers, have declined by more than 75% in the past quarter century. Entire communities of birds, like those that nest in open grassland, are in freefall. In the past, the dangers to birds were mostly direct persecution, and the remedy was legal. Today, however, the biggest threats to migratory birds do not come from the barrel of a gun, nor are they easily cured by passing laws. They arise from habitat loss and the wholesale environmental changes we have imposed on the natural world. Laws like the Federal Endangered Species Act provide last-ditch support for almost extinct birds, but conservationists now realize the smartest approach is to recognize the trouble early and try to stabilize populations while they are still relatively common. Propelled by an ancient faith deep within their genes, billions of birds hurtle the globe each season, a grand passage across the heavens that we can only dimly comprehend and are just coming to fully appreciate. They are not residents of any single place, but of the whole, and their continued survival rests almost entirely in our hands. And that's the preface to Scott Wiedensahl's book, Living on the Wind, Across the Hemisphere with Migratory Birds. I'd also like to read a small part of the prologue to Wiedensahl's new book, A World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds. I did not grow up among birders, but my parents loved the outdoors and offered encouragement, though at times bemusedly so, to their slightly strained son. My mother in particular paid attention to the rhythms of the seasons, and bird migration was central to this. She jotted down in her garden journal when the first juncos and white-throated sparrows of the fall appeared at the feeders, and when the first spring migrants returned to our yard in the mountains of eastern Pennsylvania. We paid special heed to the autumn and spring passages of Canada geese, which in the 1960s and early 70s, before non-migratory flocks overspread every suburban office campus, city lake, and farm pond in the east, were still an electrifying benchmark of the changing seasons. Most years there would be a single morning exactly when depended on the severity of the winter, but it usually fell in early March, when we would wake to the sound of geese. We'd bundle into coats and unlaced boots, racing outside to the first truly mild morning of the year, craning our necks up at a sky layered with chevrons of geese plowing north against the bleached denim sky. It was and remains one of the most thrilling moments of the natural year for me, and each winter as the days lengthened and the snow melted, we looked forward to Big Goose Day as the singular pivot in the seasonal round. So in some ways I was primed to spend a life chasing migration, but the pivotal moment came when I was 12. On an October day of blustery wind and ragged clouds, we climbed to the top of the Kittatinny Ridge, the southern tip of the Appalachian Ridge and Valley system, an hour or so from our home, a highway for migrating raptors, which ride its uplifts as they coast down the long, sinuous mountain range on their journey south. It was, by luck, exactly the right conditions for a big flight. A powerful cold front the night before had dragged strong northwest winds across the state, and the skies over Hawk Mountain Sanctuary's North Lookout were peppered with sleek predatory shapes. My family forgotten, I tucked myself in among the gray boulders, sheltering from the wind as best I could, eyes wide and excited. The silhouettes in the air looked nothing at all like the tiny drawings I had studied in my field guide, but it did not matter. Hundreds of raptors glided down the ridge that day, surfing the invisible waves of air, and I stared hungrily through my cheap binoculars as each passing hawk dragged my eyes along with it. Adults around me called out identifications and landmarks. Sharpie on the slope of 5. 2 red tails over left hunter's field. 1 hawk plunging down at a plastic owl decoy, placed for just such a purpose on a limbless sapling jammed in the rocks near where I sat, looked for long, heart-pounding seconds as though it was going to fly right through my binoculars. The spectacle was easily the most intoxicating thing I had ever witnessed, and the memory remains almost painfully intense today. I didn't have the words at the time to articulate why I was so moved, why I found the sight so spellbinding. The hawks and falcons were beautiful, of course, their passage majestic. It was enthralling to watch the way they would, with subtle corrections of their wings and tails, counterbalance the gusting wind and yoke its energy. But it wasn't till I got home that evening and dragged out my bird books and an old National Geographic map that another, even more powerful reaction manifested itself. Tracing my finger down the curving spine of the Appalachians, I thought for the first time about where those hawks had been coming from and where they were going. I'd been fuzzy on the details before, but now I read that some of these birds, the very ones I'd seen, may have come from far-off places like Greenland and Labrador and were heading to destinations like Mexico or Colombia or Patagonia that seemed impossibly exotic to a kid growing up on the edge of Pennsylvania's coal country. I slept very little that night, and my dreams were full of wings. Half a century on, I'm still captivated by migration. That's some of Scott Wiedenthal's writing in his new book, A World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds. I hope you will enjoy watching the migration this year, whenever you choose to do it and wherever. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.